From the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM, the last hour of the program tonight, The Battle for Your Health with Betty Martini. And here's what's happening. Well, the federal government has announced it is now nearly tripling the size of an area in the Gulf of Mexico that's closed to fishing because of that massive oil spill off the coast of Louisiana. That's nearly 46,000 square miles, or about 19% of federal waters, beginning now at 6 p.m. That's up from 7% of the Gulf that's been closed to fishing boats since shortly after an offshore oil rig exploded April 20th, killing 11 workers. Rig operator BP estimates that the blown-out well has now leaked more than 5 million gallons. I suspect it is much more than that. The ice melting is so fast in Greenland that the giant island is rising noticeably as the weight is lifted. In some spots, the land is rising 1 inch per year. A vast ice cap covers much of Greenland, and some places up to 1.2 miles thick. The ice in places for eons presses down the land, making the elevation at any given point lower than it would be without the ice. Scientists have documented on Greenland and elsewhere that when long-standing ice melts away, the land rebounds. Even the European Alps are rising as glaciers melt. Now scientists at the University of Miami say Greenland's ice is melting so quickly that the land underneath it is rising at an accelerated pace. The seismically active California-Mexico border rattled tonight by a magnitude 4.5 aftershock of the major earthquake that hit the region back on April 4th. No damage reported, centered 18 miles southwest of El Centro. You might recall 7.2 quake struck on Easter Sunday in northern Baja California. You know, Robert Felix has been saying on this program for years that we are in the beginning stages of a little ice age. Now a Russian scientist predicts a big one for 2014. He says the ice age could begin in just 4 years. This is a scientist from St. Petersburg's Astronomical Observatory in Russia. The scientist says that it looks like it's all related to the sun. Robert Felix may be right. You know, it's time to search for signs of life on Mars, according to scientists, something they haven't done since 1976. This time, they want to bring Martian rock and soil samples back to Earth. Here, they could be analyzed for fossilized traces of alien life, bacteria, chemical, biological clues that could only be explained by something that was alive. Such a venture, as now outlined, would be a three-part act, costing as much as $10 billion and take several years to complete. NASA cannot afford it on its own, so it recently joined with the European Space Agency to map out a shared project. Robert Zubrin heads up the Mars Society. Robert, with $10 million, why don't we just send a man to Mars?
Well, you could probably send humans to Mars for $20 billion, and that would return hundreds of times more samples and do much more exploring. So I think that should be the goal. But that said, if you're doing robotic missions, a legitimate robotic mission to Mars is a sample return. However, I don't think it should have to cost $10 billion. I don't think it should have to cost more than $1 billion. And it clearly should be designed that way. And it doesn't need to be a grand international program taking 15 years. This is the sort of thing that could be done in around 5 or 6 years. I mean, it's a more expensive mission than a rover mission, but it's a doable mission. They're really making a meal out of it.
We basically have the technology to do this now, don't we, Robert?
Well, we certainly have the technology. I mean, it's a mission that's twice as hard as a one-way mission to Mars, because you've got to also launch again and fly back, okay?
Right.
So this is not an easy mission, but it's a good mission. We did a lot of science out of it, and in a way, it's a miniature practice for a manned Mars mission. But the idea that we, the United States, can't afford it, we have to do it together with the Europeans and the Russians, and we have to do it with three spacecraft, which, by the way, makes it much harder, because now you have to do a precision surface rendezvous that is What they're talking about is first landing the rovers to get the samples and then landing a vehicle that will meet the rover and pick up the samples and fly back with it. But if you just landed a lander with the rover, you wouldn't have to do that very complicated maneuver. So a lot of this appears not to be so much science-driven as a bureaucracy wanting to create a gigantic project for itself.
Now, if they come up with this craft, let's say the rover comes down it, scoops up rocks, and comes back up, you know, like some kind of little ramp or something, could that close and then just take off again?
Well, kind of. You wouldn't take the rover back with you. You might as well leave that on Mars. It could keep exploring after you leave. But the idea is that the rover would put the sample in a capsule on the ascent vehicle, and then it would seal that up, and then they would take off with that.
All right, Robert, keep in touch. Robert Zubrin's website's part of our Twitter feed at coasttocoastam.com. $10 billion to go to Mars just to grab some rocks and come on back. Life looks a little rosier, they say, after 50, according to a new study. Older people in their mid to late 50s are generally happier and experience less stress and worry than young adults in their 20s, according to researchers. The results are based on a Gallup poll survey from 2008 of more than 340,000 Americans. Last night on this program, medium James Van Praagh hinted on Coast to Coast that CBS may not renew, may cancel Ghost Whisperer. Today, it was one of six other series canceled. CBS moving aggressively to shake up its 2010-11 season, canceling Cold Case, Ghost Whisperer, and other series, making room for William Shatner's first sitcom, a police drama as well, with Tom Selleck coming back, and other shows to be announced soon. A three-year-old drummer has become an internet sensation after a clip of him playing on YouTube attracted millions of hits. More than 3.7 million people have watched Howard Wong's astonishing performance on the drums. He first displayed his percussion skills aged just 18 months with an accompaniment to Old MacDonald Had a Farm. And now at the age of just three, Howard is already the centerpiece of his father's band, wowing audiences with his skills in a series of rock numbers as well. You know, we've talked on the program before about genetically modified foods, what it means to you. Up next, Jeffrey Smith, author of Genetic Roulette, the documented health risks of genetically modified foods. He's next on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, welcome back. Thanks for joining us. Jeffrey Smith is the executive director of the Institute for Responsible Technology and the leading spokesperson on the health dangers of genetically modified foods. Jeffrey has lectured in more than 30 countries and has been quoted by government leaders in hundreds of media outlets across the globe. Jeffrey, founder of the Campaign for Healthier Eating in America, and that's what we're going to do tonight on Coast to Coast. Jeffrey, welcome back, my friend. How are
you? Great, George. Great to be here.
Super. Let's see, the last time we talked, a court was saying, hey, you know, Monsanto, your soybeans and your other crops, we're gonna let you grow them, we think. What's going on? What's going on news-wise with the GM foods?
Well, it's a big, high-pitched battle all over the world, and the stakes are very high, and we really are reaching a culmination, a very important period. We've got the Supreme Court battle over the approval of genetically modified alfalfa. We have the Department of Justice combining with the Department of Agriculture, looking at Monsanto and seeing if it's a monopoly and what to do about that. We've got the State Department spokesperson saying in early May that they're going to actually actively confront critics of biotechnology and try and stop the naysayers like me. We've got big publications like the New York Times and The Hill down in D.C. publishing completely pro-biotech mythology as part of their op-ed pieces. The U.S. Negotiators to Codex in early May tried to create a precedent which would have made it very difficult or possibly made it difficult to have labeling, either voluntary or mandatory. And the Ohio governor is trying to push through regs that will make it difficult for companies to even say that their milk is without the genetically engineered bovine growth hormone. At the same time, on the other side, India stopped genetically modified eggplant, Turkey banned GM imports, some more and more doctors' organizations are getting on board saying that GMOs are unsafe. Natural food industry is rallying around a new third-party verified standard for non-GMO claims called the Non-GMO Project. Non-GMO claims is the fastest growing claim in 2009. Supermarket News predicts an uprising of consumer concern and awareness. So there's all sorts, it's like absolutely coming to a head. Since GMOs were introduced in 1996, we have never seen a time like this before where there's so much at stake and so much, it could go either way. And we're actually counting on the tipping point through our campaign for healthier eating in America to drive GMOs out of the market by consumer rejection.
I want your definition, Jeffrey, of genetically modified foods. Let's put it in perspective. What are they?
Well, for thousands of years, we've been crossbreeding, selecting plants with different qualities and combining them through natural sexual reproduction. With genetic engineering, you take a gene from one species, typically bacteria or viruses, you make millions of copies of that gene, you add an on switch from a virus, and you shoot it out of a gun into a plate of cells, plant cells. Then you clone those cells into a plant, and that's genetically engineering a crop to produce a trait that it normally doesn't carry. So there's two varieties, primarily, of genetically engineered crops. There's poison drinkers and poison producers. The poison drinkers are herbicide-tolerant crops. They're able to receive sprays of a normally deadly herbicide, typically Roundup from Monsanto. Mm-hmm. So these Roundup-ready crops are sold in combination with Roundup herbicide. Most of the crops are designed to drink this poison. Now, the other is poison producers, where they get a gene from the soil bacterium called Bacillus thuringiensis, or BT, which is a natural insect killer. It rips open their stomach and kills them. So now every cell of certain cotton and corn plants have a little spray bottle producing a toxin, which is kills plants, and we eat also when we eat the corn varieties.
Well, if it kills plants and insects, what does it do to people?
Well, this is what the subject of my book, Genetic Roulette, the documented health risks of genetically engineered foods. It turns out it does a really dangerous stuff. I'll quote the American Academy of Environmental Medicine, who last year said that the animal feeding studies on GMOs, and there's not a lot, they showed that there's a causal relationship, not a casual relationship, but a causal relationship, according to the medical doctors, between the animal feed and disorders. They said things like infertility, immune system problems, accelerated aging, dysfunctional regulation of insulin and cholesterol, organ damage, gastrointestinal disorders, and other things. And we see, last time I was on the air here, 2 weeks ago, we had the most recent report of hamsters who were fed genetically modified soybeans. By the third generation, over a two-year study, most of the hamsters that were eating the genetically modified soy were unable to have babies. They also died at four or five times the rate for infant mortality of the control groups. They were slower in growing, slower to reach sexual maturity, and some had the bizarre feature of even having hair growing in their mouths.
Jeez, now, give me a list of the foods that are out there now that are genetically modified that we are eating.
Well, it's soy and corn are the two major ones because their derivatives are practically omnipresent. You have dextrose, maltodextrin, high fructose corn syrup, soy lecithin, soy protein isolate. So soy and corn are two. Then you have canola and cottonseed, both used for vegetable oil, and also sugar beets, which are used, of course, for the U.S. sugar supply. It's a combination of cane sugar and sugar beet sugar. Those are the five major crops.
And those five would take up what percent of the GM-type foods?
99.9%.
Okay, huge number then.
Yeah, the
huge
only others are papaya exclusively from Hawaii and a little bit of zucchini and yellow squash. But primarily, the millions and millions of acres dedicated to GMOs are these other five crops. And unfortunately, if you go and you buy Hershey's chocolate and Heinz ketchup and all these things, you're going to end up looking at the ingredients and the things that we buy all the time, Hellman's mayonnaise, you buy, you know, veggie burgers even, some of them, they have a lot of these ingredients. And so it takes a little study to figure out which brands don't have GMOs. And so we created nongmoshoppingguide.com, which lists hundreds of brands in 22 food categories to tell people which brands don't have these derivatives, and also gives people a list of those derivatives and also other tips to help avoid GMOs.
Are you as concerned, Jeffrey, the fact that cotton is genetically modified?
Well, yes, for a couple of reasons. It is used for cottonseed oil, so it is a food crop, even though people don't associate
okay.
it with it.
Okay, it's one of the five.
But the other thing is this, that in India, and I visited India extensively last year, and wherever I went in a cotton-growing region, I followed up reports of reactions by farm workers to touching the cotton. And yes, it's true. When they touch this cotton, such a high percentage of the farm workers get itching in their bodies, or they get upper respiratory problems, or they get eye swelling and things like that. Some have to go to the hospital. Now, when I was preparing this book, Genetic Roulette, I was writing down all the different adverse findings that I could find, and after I put them all down in the book, I did a section called Connecting the Dots, and I looked specifically at these symptoms that were being described by the doctors who were treating the Indian patients. And I looked at another section of the symptoms being described in a peer-reviewed published study of about 500 people in Washington State or Vancouver who got sprayed with BT pesticide.
Oh, jeez.
And it was the same symptoms. You see, the BT pesticide is a natural insecticide from soil bacteria. The BT cotton is a genetically engineered cotton where the bacterial gene is inserted into the cotton and produces that toxin in thousands of times more concentration than the spray levels. And it was exactly the same symptoms. So it's not just that. When they allow the animals in India to graze on the cotton plants, George, after harvest, they've been doing that for years.
Sure.
There was no problem. But when they started allowing the animals to graze on the BT cotton plants, thousands of them died.
Oh, my.
Okay. I was in one village, a small village in Andhra Pradesh, and they told me that they allowed their 13 buffalo to graze for years on non-GM cotton plants, but they allowed them to graze on BT cotton plants, a genetically engineered variety, for a single day, January 3rd, 2008. And they showed me pictures of 13 dead buffalo sitting, you know, lying on the ground next to their owners.
That's frightening.
Yeah, it's absolutely frightening. And the thing is, when they just fed the cottonseed cake to other buffalo in northern India, most of them had reproductive problems. Many of their calves died. Many of them died. They had skin problems. The quality and quantity of the milk was reduced. But what's interesting was that most of the buffalo actually refused to eat the genetically engineered varieties.
And, you know, so many people, Jeffrey, are getting sick, and they don't know why. They don't know how they came down with these various ailments or these cancers and tumors, stomach problems. Who's to say it's not all these things?
I know. When GMOs were introduced in 1996, 7% of Americans had three or more chronic illnesses.
7%.
9 years later, 13%. Food allergies doubled in less time. Food-related illnesses doubled between 1994 and 2001, according to the Center for Disease Control. So we have seen also an increase in autism, in migraines, in certain cancers. Now, people say, well, if GMOs are dangerous, why don't we see more dead bodies? Well, even dead bodies wouldn't necessarily lead to a conclusion that GMOs are at fault. For example, it takes a certain kind of uniqueness in the symptoms. If someone's just getting more of the same, more heart disease, more cancer, what are they going to do? Have you been eating food? Have you been eating packaged food with GMOs? No one is looking. In Canada, Health Canada, which is their FDA, in 2002, they said, we're going to evaluate the health of Canadians to see if GMOs are causing any problems. Within a year, they canceled their plan, saying it was too hard. The pro-GM UK government, they said GMOs are completely safe, but secretly, they are planning studies to look at the loyalty cards in supermarkets to see if people who are buying GMOs had higher levels of cancer and birth defects and allergies. When that study was leaked to the press, the embarrassed government stopped that. So there is no massive experiment. It's an uncontrolled experiment, and no one is monitoring the population.
Jeffrey, when we come back, I want to talk about these five foods that you just mentioned, and we'll go through them and see how prevalent they are in the marketplace. And then I want to ask you what the FDA is doing about this. We'll be back. Well, you don't have to be lonesome tonight because you've got us here at Coast to Coast AM. Webmaster Lex Lonehood putting the final touches with the digital staff on the modified coasttocoastam.com website. Brand new things coming out, and it looks fantastic. I have seen the beta version, and the real one is right around the corner. Included in that will be the Instapoll. We'll give you a topic. You'll be able to go to the website and immediately cast your vote, and we'll get the results on the program. And you can also monitor it on the website. So a lot of changes coming to the brand new coasttocoastam.com website. We think you'll like it. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. I'm George Norrie. We're with Jeffrey Smith, author of Seeds of Deception and Genetic Roulette. Jeffrey, let's go through some of these foods, and then I want to talk with you about the FDA and see what they're doing about this, if anything. Soy, first of all, how is it being used genetically modified?
Well, 91% of the soy planted in the United States is Roundup-ready soy. It's genetically engineered with a gene from bacteria. And here's the backstory. Monsanto scientists found bacteria growing in a chemical waste dump near their factory in the presence of Roundup herbicide. So they figured, great, let's put it in the food supply. So they took the gene that allowed the bacteria to survive the normally deadly dose of Roundup herbicide, okay, and put it into the soybeans. So it, what it does is it prevents the death that is normally created by the Roundup herbicide.
Right.
Now, what happens is there's a number of things that happen. First of all, farmers are using a lot more Roundup on the soybeans, and as a result, they've been using about 383 million pounds more in the United States in the first 13 years that GMOs were introduced. Now, that means that there's more Roundup residue both on our food and in the soil. And it doesn't biodegrade like Monsanto promised, but it turns out it persists in the soil, and it causes problems. What it does is it binds with trace minerals like manganese and magnesium and iron and calcium, and they're unable to get access into the plant. So the plants become more diseased, and the soil becomes more prone to a fungal infection called fusarium, which creates toxins which are dangerous to humans. And so they're just discovering now that the Roundup, which is being used for these Roundup-ready crops like soybeans, when they use the next crop rotation for wheat, it reduces the yield. It can cause this fusarium infection, which is called head blight fungus, and it's a disaster. And this information is just coming out this year for the first time, including by a whistleblower in the USDA. I mean, he's not officially a whistleblower. He did research on it, but they don't want him to talk about it because the USDA is designed to promote the biotechnology industry. In addition, we consume this Roundup in our food, and the Roundup is associated with all sorts of potential diseases more and more. In fact, one scientist, Dr. Carrasco in Argentina, found it was linked to birth defects in his studies with amphibians and probably he surmised in humans. But when he announced his findings, he was attacked viciously. Four very large gentlemen showed up, a very aggressive gentleman showed up in his laboratory and tried to interrogate him. So it's the same thing over and over again. When people discover problems, they get the sharp side of the sword. Yeah.
How about the corn?
The corn has two varieties. It's 85% of the corn, and it's either Roundup Ready or Liberty Link, meaning that it survives applications of either Roundup herbicide or Liberty herbicide, or it produces a BT toxin, which kills insects. Now, the Austrian government did a study with corn that was both Roundup Ready and BT toxin producing, and they gave the corn to mice, and the more the corn was fed to the mice, the fewer the babies they had and the smaller the babies were compared to when they were eating natural corn. When the Italian government did a study giving the BT corn to mice, the mice had massive immune responses, which are correlated with all sorts of potential problems in humans. In Monsanto's own studies, which they do 90-day studies with rats, they say it passed with flying colors. But when lawsuits allowed the studies to be revealed and it was re-examined with proper statistics, it showed signs of toxicity in the liver and kidneys and also immune system responses.
Jeffrey, what percent of the soy in the corn that's being planted is genetically modified?
Well, it's 91% of the soy, 85% of the corn. So that means you eat a derivative of soy or corn, like a corn oil or a soy oil or a soy flour, unless they consciously separate the non-GMO, and they'll do it by labeling something non-GMO or organic, unless they label it non-GMO or organic, then it's going to have the majority of its input as a genetically engineered crop.
What about your corn on the cob that you pick up, you know, ears of corn?
Well, years ago, the Cornell website estimated that only 3 to 5% of the corn on the cob in the country was a GMO, but that hasn't been updated, and we don't have the money to do the research, and so we don't know the percentage of corn on the cob. We don't know the percentage of the zucchini or yellow squash. One piece of good news is this. There is no popcorn that's genetically engineered, and it doesn't even cross-pollinate with field corn, so popcorn is safe.
Why are farmers using the genetically modified soy and corn seeds and not the old Mother Nature seeds?
Well, you know, it's a combination of things. I was talking to a corn breeder, and he said he has a corn variety that resists the European corn borer, which is exactly what the BT insecticide-producing corn by Monsanto does.
Mm-hmm.
But he said that no one's interested because the big companies are just pushing the genetically modified varieties. They're pushing those traits. And so they're actually removing from their catalogs the popular non-GM varieties. So one of the reasons why farmers are uptaking this technology in large numbers is because it's being pushed on them and alternatives are being eliminated. But the farmer who uses the herbicide-tolerant, the pesticide tolerant or the herbicide tolerant crops, they can weed more easily with less labor. They don't have to go into the fields and pull the weeds. They can just spray over the top of it. And those that use the BT pesticide producing corn, it's like an insurance policy in case that particular year they get an infestation of the European corn borer. But frankly, when the USDA looked at the statistics, they found that the GMOs were not increasing the profit of farmers. In fact, it was reducing the profit of farmers in many cases. And the most comprehensive study of yield showed that the average yield from a GM crop is reduced. It actually goes down 5 to 10% with soybeans, about 7.5% with canola. And you also end up with these incidences of complete disasters. Like it was just reported this week that there's been the Chinese cotton is overrun with pests. The Columbia cotton was a failure. 30% of the corn, genetically modified corn in South Africa, failed to germinate. We had massive problems in India. In fact, one of the big problems about unreliable genetically modified seeds is what is evident in India. The UK Daily Mail estimates that an incredible, astounding 125,000 farmers committed suicide because they planted BT cotton, and the money that they got from their paltry yields was not enough to pay back the high-interest loans that they had taken to pay for the more expensive seeds and the associated chemicals.
So they killed themselves.
They killed themselves mostly by drinking agricultural chemicals.
Unbelievable.
Like it's just, I mean, and my friend Vandana Shiva estimates it even higher at 200,000. This is a catastrophe. And Monsanto goes in there and is removing the availability of non-GMO seeds in entire states. And they're getting spiritual leaders to promote GMOs and Bollywood actors to promote GMOs, and they've put their own people into the approval process so that those that are actually independent regulators, independently minded who want to evaluate it, they're absolutely frustrated because they see it's a complete rubber stamp. These regulators don't even read the submissions. They're just basically doing whatever the biotech industry asks them to do.
Now, I don't even want to call the old seeds non-GMO because they came first. So what do we label them as?
We can call them conventional.
Conventional or natural?
Yes.
All right. These conventional seeds, the corn, the soybeans, are there any left?
Yes, there are. There are certainly conventional ones left. You know, 15% of the corn, 9% of the soy, maybe 13% of the cotton. Now, we intend to reverse those numbers dramatically. We intend to create a tipping point of consumer rejection.
Let them grow again, huh?
Yes, exactly. And it wouldn't happen if we couldn't replace them all in one season because there's not enough seeds. But over a couple of seasons or more, we would be able to
take over.
To take back, yes.
By the way, why did the divine creator even come up with weeds? What's a purpose of a weed?
Well, you know, in Africa, they don't call them weeds. They call them herbs, and it's part of their diet. And so this whole concept of monocultures and herbicide-tolerant crops, it ruins some of their biodiversity. But it turns out if you have proper soil biology with the fungus-bacteria ratio correct, you don't have the kind of weeds that we're seeing in today's monocultures in the U.S. And so what we've created, actually, but with the surplus of nerve gas and bomb-making material in World War II, that's why we have fertilizer and pesticides, because of the defense industry had extra capacity and extra materials left over. And so they've created a perfect scenario to keep the plants diseased, to have high infestation of weeds, high infestation of insects, which demands more input. But if you go into really advanced, natural, sustainable farms, they don't require the chemicals. They don't have the problems because insects do not attack healthy plants in general. It's a balance there. And the weeds don't grow because the biodiversity covers that aspect too, as well as the soil biology. So we have it completely backwards. And a lot of the knowledge that was there in traditional farming is gone because all the farmers are now learning from the biotech industry and the agricultural chemical industry through their research that they conduct at the land-grant universities, et cetera.
Let's knock off canola in cottonseed oil.
Okay. So canola, we have 80 to 85% is genetically engineered, and all that is herbicide tolerant. Now, the problem with that is that when you grow canola and then you want to, let's say, grow non-GM canola, then the canola itself that hangs out as volunteer crops from the previous year, that becomes a weed that you can't kill with the normal herbicide because it is herbicide tolerant. Furthermore, the genes from the canola actually cross-pollinate with weeds that are relatives of the canola. So now you have wild mustard and other weeds that are accidentally herbicide tolerant. You can't kill them with the weed killer because they've cross-pollinated and picked up the resistance to the weed killer. Now, I mentioned these volunteer crops. That's a big problem with these contamination. If you plant canola for 1 year that's genetically modified, and then you plant non-GM canola every year thereafter, for the next 16 years, you're going to have more than 1% contamination of GMOs because of the thousands or millions of seeds that end up in the soil that aren't harvested and that grow year after year and then spill more seeds. And so we have contamination not only in the same year to neighboring farms, but also into future generations.
Monsanto, by the way, almost $12 billion in sales, I hear.
Yeah, they're amazing in their ability to completely spin the truth. I mean, I have in Genetic Roulette, there's a whole section on how companies rig research, and Monsanto is clearly highlighted there. When they were creating their genetically modified bovine growth hormone, and they wanted to show that the injections did not interfere with fertility in cows, documents were stolen from the FDA and made public, and it showed that they apparently secretly added cows to the study that were already pregnant before they were injected.
Now, Jeffrey, also they produce tomato, pepper seeds, eggplants, melons, cucumbers, pumpkins, squash, beans, broccoli, onions, lettuce. Are those GMs or are those just natural, the old conventional type?
Well, the ones that we buy in the market are non-GM because that's not yet commercialized, but they have a genetically modified counterpart to all of these waiting in laboratories or in field trials, because Monsanto's stated goal to Arthur Andersen, the group that was their consultant years ago, was to genetically engineer 100% of all the commercial seeds in the world and patent them to replace nature. And Andersen created the strategy and tactics to achieve that. And even in 1999, the biotech industry was still projecting that only 5 years later, they were expecting to have 95% of all commercial seeds genetically engineered. Fortunately, a gag order was lifted 3 weeks after they made that prediction. A gag order from a scientist in the UK was lifted. He could finally talk about what he knew about the safety of GMOs, and all hell broke loose in the papers. 750 articles were written in a single month, and Europe was rallied against GMOs, and within a single week, virtually every major food company in Europe committed to stop using GM ingredients there because the tipping point of consumer rejection had been achieved.
Amazing. What about India?
India has the cotton there is a disaster. We've got the suicides, we've got the itching and the symptoms, and we have also the animal deaths. The approval process is a complete sham, but the biotech industry wants to push through a whole bunch of vegetables quickly. They're picking these developing countries to get through these other products. And so there was a film based on my second book, Genetic Roulette, called Poison on the Platter, produced by a top Bollywood producer named Mahesh Bhatt, that came out last year in February, and it became one of the most talked about films in India, and it galvanized public support against GMOs for the first time in India. And that had full expression earlier this year when 100,000 people fasted against the potential introduction of genetically modified eggplant. 8,000 people showed up at 7 hearings put on by the Minister of Environment, and the minister said, no, we're not going to allow the eggplant to be approved. And so India is rising up against GMOs, and the U.S. State Department is very angry about that. They are trying to push the approval. In fact, Nina Fedorov, who is the scientific advisor for Hillary Clinton, visited India and actually gave a lot of false information to the press there about GMOs in an attempt to convince the public that they needed this dangerous technology.
Jeez, and what happens to this young biotech student graduating from college who gets a nice offer to go to the biotech firms, Jeffrey? What do they do?
Well, you know, it's worse than that. You see, there is this agreement between the U.S. government and the Indian government to have a knowledge initiative where they are actually bringing biotech students from India to study in the U.S. It's part of the way, it's the insipidous, it's a horrible way that they're doing it, but they're bringing the bright scientists into Monsanto's laboratories, into laboratories in different colleges where it's basically pro-GM, and then sending them back with the mission to spread the gospel about GMOs. So and they're also giving a ton of money to Africa, and certainly Africans need money. The Gates Foundation and others, the Danforth Foundation, they're giving tons of money with the State Department's
approval,
facilitation and approval into Africa. And it's a very dangerous situation because they're right now in the crosshairs of the biotech industry.
Let's wrap up the hour talking about the sugar beet then. Where is this GM food going to be put?
Well, 90 or 95% of the sugar beets are genetically modified. Now, a federal court just determined that the approval of the sugar beets, like the alfalfa before it, was illegal, that the Agriculture Department did not do a proper evaluation of the environmental impacts, but because after Monsanto introduced it, they threw out all of the non-GM seeds. They said, well, there's no seeds. If you try and do an injunction and prevent the planting of GM seeds, then you'll destroy the industry. So the judge said, okay, we won't have a temporary injunction, but in July we're going to revisit that, and I might do a permanent injunction. However, because the Supreme Court will be ruling in June about alfalfa, if they rule in Monsanto's favor, then it's possible that the federal court will not do a permanent injunction and will continue to be eating the genetically modified sugar until we fight it in other ways.
This could be one of the biggest stories of the millennium, Jeffrey.
It already is. I mean, right now, George, they're feeding the products of an infant science to the entire population. They're putting it into the environment where it can never be fully recalled with current technology. Now, there's never been a technology deployed this way. I mean, some people think, well, what about asbestos and what about tobacco? This is permanent gene pollution and full-on exposure to the entire population. And when we look at, another study, they find that they fed female rats, genetically modified.
Well, let's talk about that when we come back, that study, and then we'll get into what the FDA is doing to protect us, if anything. We'll be back.